The content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
Ready, set, go!
And the truth shall set you free!
Welcome to One Life Radio.
Oh my gosh, yes, the truth shall set you free, everyone. Welcome to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior in the Mix. We are broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. Junior, I'm pulling in like the mob today. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
We were joking about that before we went live.
Weather feels like it's upstate New York right now. I mean, geez.
Oh, I know.
It is cold in Dallas today.
It is colder than a mother.
Yeah, thanks for pausing that. Give me a heart attack doing that.
Oh my gosh, I know. I've got a stuffy nose. I was out in this morning. So this morning I was getting my daughter's lunch ready for school, and I'm looking out my beautiful windows onto my big lawn. I really do have a nice property with lots of nature, and I have a lot of animals. But Isra was out there, you know, just galloping and having a ball. And I'm like, what is she doing? I see papers flying all over the place. Well, I get a lot of books delivered here. You know, a lot of books are sent to me from different publishing houses from all over the world. And so there was like four books. Well, guess what? She destroyed every one of them.
Oh, man.
There was papers flying everywhere. She's like, woohoo, you know, grabbing them. So I told Marie, I'm like, the books are gone. We got to get some more.
Oh, man.
But yeah, but what, you know, I love her though. She's so much fun. She is full of life. Yeah. All 100 pounds of her. But we really have a fantastic show today. We do. We're looking forward to it. We've got Von Eaglin with us. He is a longtime regular on One Life Radio. And we're talking about Gottman's myths and truths about dysfunctional relationships. Von, how you doing? Are you there?
Yes, I am. So how you guys doing? Good afternoon.
Good. Yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm trying to stay COVID-free and out this cold weather, and things are going really well. Things are going really well in my
house. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, like, yeah, it's really cold today here in Texas. So everybody, protect your pets. That's all I can ever think of is, oh, my gosh. And the homeless people and the pets that are all out there in this brutal cold that I could barely handle walking 30 feet, you know? So think about that. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a dog that's outside, or you know somebody in your neighborhood that maybe hangs out at a corner that's homeless, you know, help them out. Help out a brother. Help out a friend. So a brother or a sister, right? Either one of them. I'm actually going to probably go out and do that today. I typically do, you know, because we have to help one another. We just simply do. It's part of our responsibility living on this earth together. Agreed?
Agreed.
Totally agree.
Yeah, not to be Debbie Downer, but we are getting ready to talk about relationships, dysfunctional ones. But let me introduce you officially first, Von. So Von Eaglin, as I said, has been on the show for a very long time. He is a licensed professional, a professional counselor, supervisor, and works with two group practices in the Dallas area. He is a certified couple relationship trainer and sees a wide range of clients addressing men's issues, anger management, abuse, and addiction, just to name a few. He is also a doctoral candidate at the University of North Texas in the Counseling and Higher Education Department. His PhD research focuses on couple relationships dialogue. You can find him at VonTalksTherapy.com or follow him on Instagram at VonTalks. You know, and as I said today, we're talking about Gottman's myths and truths. It's hard to say myths. Say it, you guys. Let's see how well you do.
Myths.
Oh, my gosh. So Gottman's myths and truths about dysfunctional relationships. So, Von, can you tell us the background on this research and Dr. Gottman?
Yeah, so a lot of my research for my dissertation is based in his theory. So John Gottman, he's one of the preeminent psychotherapists in the world, really. He's one of the, I guess, 10 most influential therapists of this past century. He can predict with about a 94% accuracy rate whether a couple going to stay together or get divorced. And it's the first empirically validated theory out there, because most people went into, you know, hey, I'm going to do couples counseling, or I want to work with couples, and they have these thoughts or ideas. However, there was 40 years of research based on his theory where thousands and thousands of couples, longitudinal studies, I mean, newlyweds, heterosexual couples, gay couples, I mean, just a whole lot of research. And most people take information from his theory and try to, you know, they reformat it. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of mathematical equations that go into his theory. And so we don't guess about, like, hey, we think this is what makes couples work at this point. We pretty much know, like, okay, this is what you need to have in order for your relationship to be successful. So the guesswork is taken out of it.
Wow. Interesting. Really interesting. Well, you know, you're currently working on a research study for your dissertation. What can you tell us about it? I'm so interested.
Yeah, that is correct. So I am researching a marital workshop. It's actually a different one called Safe Conversations, but I'm applying a lot of Gottman's assessments to it. Here's the skinny of it. Pretty much you can do an online workshop, go through some modules, and then you take some assessments, and it is free pretty much. So this workshop usually costs about $150. You can find it on my website. You just go to Vaughn, V-O-N, Talks with an S, therapy.com. So VaughnTalksTherapy.com, and then there's a link on there. You can read about information, sign up, do some assessments, see if you qualify. And if you qualify, you can go through the workshop. And I'm looking for married couples who want to improve their communication within their relationship. So it's pretty simple. Married couples who want to improve their relationship, just go to my website at VaughnTalksTherapy.com, and you can sign up and go from there. So
wow. It takes a long time to get your PhD. It really does for so many people. But it's going to be so great when I get to call you Dr. Vaughn England, right?
Yeah. So yeah, hopefully in May. That's the goal. So.
Oh, really? Oh, nice.
Yeah.
All right. So. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm excited. We're gonna have to throw. Are you throwing a party? Let's throw a party. I think we should.
My wife is throwing a party, and you'll be invited, Bernadette.
All right.
We'll definitely send you the invite. So.
Oh, I'll be there for sure. Well, you know, so let's dive into these myths and truths about dysfunctional relationships, starting with the myths. Okay, the first myth, myth number one, is quid pro quo in relationships. Okay, so
yes,
you know. Go ahead.
No, this is great stuff. So the happiest, here's the myth. Most people think that the happiest relationships are those where the couple keeps track of what the other person has contributed to the relationship. You know, the goal is to, you know, ensure fairness, equality, equanimity, you know, equity, you know, whatever word you want to use to say, you know, things are being fair. And this was actually back in the 1970s when people discovered this, that, you know, people tend to have this implicit contract in their head, you know, we're going to exchange positive things with one another. But the truth of the matter is that when one partner becomes an emotional accountant, I do this, therefore you do this, then there's something wrong in the relationship. In other words, when you think, you know, I'm the person that never gets reciprocated, or I'm doing this and you're not giving to me, like, that's a red flag in a relationship, because reciprocity will always break down. In fact, I like to say it like this, that, you know, fairness is actually a fallacy. It's an untruth, because here's the thing. I think you know what I think is fair, and you think I know what you think is fair, but there's no universal judge in the world saying, okay, this is what fairness is, and this is how you're supposed to treat people. So, you know, it's going to break down at some point. Really what you need to have is both people trying to serve the other person in the relationship and not necessarily keep track, because the truth of the matter is that, you know, relationships will not always be balanced. You're going to go through seasons inside of your relationship. For instance, like, you know, I have a son, he's still 1 year old, but my wife did a lot of the heavy lifting when she was pregnant, and, you know, it was unbalanced in some ways. You know, I'm not breastfeeding, you know. If a relationship goes through, I don't know, let's say one person loses their job, hey, things will be unbalanced at some point. So, again, this idea of reciprocity will always break down. And so if you're always keeping track of your partner, that's not a good thing. So
yeah, I would agree. Yeah. I can see where that could be very damaging and exhausting, actually, emotionally exhausting. Dealing with an emotional accountant, as you said, that I love that term.
I'm really guilty of this, Bernadette, because, like, when I first got married, my wife and I, you know, she doesn't do the cooking. I'm the problem, really, the cook in the house, and we made this agreement. You know, we shook on it. Hey, I'll cook. You do the dishes. Well, I cooked the first day, the dishes weren't done. Second day, the dishes weren't done. Third day, I'm like, what kind of woman did I marry? I can't believe that you're cheating me. And so nowadays, we don't care who does the dishes. However, you know, it did break down, and it broke down really quickly in that first month when I got married. So,
yeah. It happens. Yeah. I have this friend when she got married for the first time about, you know, like it was a couple days after she first got married. And she said to her new husband, it's serve yourself dinner night. You know, and he said, what do you mean serve yourself dinner? Where's that coming from? people do have unrealistic. Yeah. Yeah. That's funny, right? Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And they ended up divorced. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So myth number two is extramarital affairs cause divorce. How is that a myth?
Yeah, so, well, here's the thing. People think that extramarital affairs are the major cause of divorce. But so Frank Pittman and this idea, so you got to, this idea is really worthy of consideration. And there's no question that an affair or some kind of extra relationship outside of your marriage can present a problem for most couples. Most couples are monogamous relationships. Again, I've had different couples come to my office, from open relationships to people that do all kind of polyamorous relationships, so on and so forth. Now, what they found is that about 80% of the time, you know, the major cause of divorce is that people really become emotionally distant and they drift apart. So therefore, that represents a failure of friendship and intimacy. In other words, because they're not emotionally connected, those are the things that lead to the affair, you know. And it's really not just about the sex. Most people think, oh, I just want to have sex with somebody else, you know. But really, it's about finding someone who desires you, someone who you feel close to, feel connected with, someone who you have friendship with. And many times people, you know, when they don't feel connected to their spouse, they'll start making these small concessions. Oh, you know, mm-hmm. what a longing look, or, you know, and then I tap you on your shoulder, then I touch you on the small of your back, then the hug lasts a little bit longer. It's not only a side hug, but a full body hug. And then so on, I look lovingly into your eyes. And, you know, again, you make all these small concessions, and those are the things that lead to the divorce. Mm-hmm. Or we, you know, I'm in an office cubicle, and we, you know, I complain about my wife, and you complain about your husband, and then we agreed about how we felt, and then all of a sudden some sparks, but it's usually a representation or a mm-hmm. manifestation of a lack of friendship and a lack of intimacy. Mm-hmm. So those, by and large, are the things that lead to extramarital affairs.
Right.
And again, the affair is just a manifestation of the other things, bigger problems in the relationship.
Yeah. I'm going to throw you a curveball here. What about a man or a woman that gets addicted to porn? And they just become there are exceptions, right?
Yes, there are. So I see we're going into some layered issues right here, Bernice, because that would be something that I would say that is a comorbidity within a relationship. Because if there is an addiction, then that, you know, we got to deal with the addiction before we lead to, like, you guys being connected. Because that addiction, whether it could be porn, whether it could be, you know, alcoholism, whether it could be gambling, it could be a lot of different things. But when you throw addiction in it, that changes the landscape quite a bit. Because until we deal with the porn addiction, if someone is having sex, and, you know, I mean, there's a scale to this. Like, whenever I have a client that comes in with some kind of sex addiction, I will try to, you know, evaluate, you know, are you spending money on this? You know, somebody who looks at porn, you know, once a week is different than someone who looks at porn daily versus someone who gets lost and loses track of time versus someone who, you know, is spending mm-hmm. money, you know, getting prostitutes, you know, getting call girls. Like, there are a lot of levels to this. By and large, you know that you tend to have an issue with porn if you're losing track of time, if it's affecting your sex life, if you're starting to want all your sex to look like porn, because really porn is based around a man's masturbatory experience, meaning that it's made for men to masturbate, you know, because mm-hmm. in porn, women worship a man's penis, you know.
Because of porn what? Life, say that again?
In porn, women worship a man's penis. Like, that's literally what mm-hmm. they bow down before it. They you know, oh my God, I love this, so on and so forth. But, you know, most in real life, women don't really, you know, want a man's penis. They really want, you know, until they like the man who is attached to. You know what
yeah.
I'm saying? So,
yeah.
So there's I mean, that's a big curveball. I can go into that for the rest of the show, honestly, so Bernadette. But yeah. So.
Yeah, straight talk with Von Eaglin. All right. I'm looking at the clock. I didn't even look over because I'm so just engaged in the conversation, but we need to go to break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. More coming up with Von Eaglin. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Shake up your fitness routine in 2022 with Sun Warrior and Ice Shaker Workout Wednesday resolutions. Resolution number one, stay hydrated. Even mild dehydration affects our performance both physically and mentally. When we're hydrated, we maximize our workout, increase our energy level, and improve our brain function. The best way to stay hydrated is Sun Warrior's new Active Energy Hydration. Sun Warrior blends coconut water, vitamin C, elderberry, and B12 for optimal hydration and immune support. Mix it with water in an ice shaker and you're good to go. Your ice shaker keeps drinks cold for a full day and even longer, which is a must for those long work days, tough workouts, and weekend road trips. You'll never have to taste warm gummy protein drink mix from a cup again because your ice shaker is like a cooler in a cup. Go to sunwarrior.com and iceshaker.com today to use the code OLR at checkout for special One Life Radio listener discounts. And listen to One Life Radio for more Workout Wednesday resolutions from Sun Warrior and Ice Shaker.
10 years of positivity on your radio. This is One Life Radio.
All right. Welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior in the Mix and Von Eaglin. We are continuing our broadcast live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. We're talking with Von Eaglin. He is a licensed professional counselor supervisor and works with two group practices in the Dallas area. And his PhD research focuses on couple relationships dialogue. And today we're talking about Dr. John Gottman's myths and truths about dysfunctional relationship. I'm trying to remember where we left off. I think we're at myth number three, right? Monogamy.
Yeah, we talked about affairs, and we got into a little bit of porn, and then we're talking about monogamy. At this point.
There you go. Okay, so myth number three, monogamy, blah, I'm having trouble saying that, is for women. Why is that a myth?
Yeah, so the idea that men need and want to have sex with many partners, but women, you know, on the other hand, need to have security, constant love, and just be with one partner. And so gender differences and sexual needs tend to erode relationships. So what we're finding, though, is that women actually exceed men in cheating nowadays. And so, you know, the idea is that in the past that, you know, men are philanderers and they, you know, they lack accountability and that they want to have, they want to spread their seed, so to speak. What we're finding is that women like to have a lot of sex just as much as men do, you know, and they're willing to go out and step out on their partners unbeknownst to their partner. So that's just what's playing out and what you see going on in society.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing is that many people attribute this to women being in the workforce in large numbers and them having developed more economic power. You know, the feminist movement and you guys outpace us and going to higher education and job finding and different things like that. Like, you guys just have a lot more accessibility. And so you're finding men to connect with and go have sex with. Whereas in the past, the 1960s, you're sitting at home with kids and, you know, there's one household income. And so your access is giving you, I mean, you're taking advantage of it.
Yeah, it's understandable. There's more opportunity out there to it. But, you know, it comes down to this. Either you're a cheater or you're not. Either you're a thief or you're not. You show me a thief, a cheater, I'll show you a thief. They go hand in hand, you know. And mostly you're cheating yourself because it's a huge character flaw. Would you agree?
So cheating represents a lot of times, again, a lack of trust in a relationship. And so, again, not all people cheat for the same reason. You know, some people cheat because they want to have sex. Some people cheat for the lack of emotional connection. Some people actually cheat, and they don't even know how they ended up in the situation, you know. So, again, cheating happens differently. But by and large, typically when it does happen, lack of trust, you're going to probably develop some kind of double life. You're going to be deceptive. You won't be as transparent. Those will lead to big cracks inside of the foundation because trust is the most foundational component, or at least one of the most foundational components to having a stable, successful, and consistently warm, loving relationship. So cheaters are, you know, not ideal. And actually, you know, when people cheat and they find that the partner's cheating, most of them actually stay together, which you find out. But
really?
It's not ideal. Yeah, so it's not ideal, though.
Yeah, why would you stay with someone after they've cheated on you? I don't understand. Unless you're doing it for the kids. I could see that, you know, you're doing it for the kids. But if you don't have children with them, I'd be gone so fast. It's like, why waste your time?
I don't know. Should I use some self-disclosure on this burn there whenever I cheated in the past? Or, I don't know, some of these women, they stayed with me because different reasons. By and large, a lot of them, you know, they fell in love with my potential, or I treated them this way, or I showed them the moon and stuff like that. Or the sex was just good. I don't know. It could have been a lot of different reasons, but go ahead.
No, I was going to make a smart remark, you know, but, you know, and you see it here in Dallas. I mean, there's a lot of women here in Dallas. They don't even care. As long as the bills are getting paid and the pockets are deep, you could cheat on. They don't care. They just don't care. Mm-hmm. But then here's, you know, one time I'm trying to tell this story as quickly as I can. One of my best friends and I were having a conversation about somebody who her fiance cheated on her. He was a cheater. She didn't know it really, you know. Women can just be kind of, you know, oblivious sometimes. But anyway, he was a cheater and he cheated on her while they were engaged, like right before they got married. And then she forgave him. But one of my friends, who's very, very smart, by the way, she said the reason she forgave him is because she doesn't really love him. It's all about the money. And I agree with that. You know, I really do. I think that if you really love someone, the wound is so deep. If they betray you, there's no going back, in my opinion. Junior, back me up on this.
I don't know. I think it's situational. I mean, I don't know.
You do?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you can't judge every relationship the same way. I mean, if a couple's been together for a while and they went through some hard times and maybe the wife or the husband stepped out and then they talked about it and, you know, I don't know. I think there's some ways that it can work. And I've had friends where they've been in situations and they've reconciled and they're still married and they're happy. I mean, I don't know. I think it's a situational thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I reasonably can listen to both sides, to listen to that and say, yeah, that makes sense. And I don't know.
There's a really good TED Talk by Esther Perel, and it's called Rethinking Infidelity. It's probably one of her most popular TED Talks. But if you want more information, just, you know, look it up on YouTube. Again, Esther Perel, Perel, P-E-R-E-L. And it says Rethinking Infidelity. She goes into some ideas about why it is people cheat. Like there may be an existential component. And yeah. I mean, so again, people cheat for different reasons. But by and large, if cheating does happen and the people want to stay together, then they have to really get rid of their old relationship. And the cheating, again, it's symbolic many times of something else going on in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that should act as a catalyst to them, trying to have a new relationship or reestablishing a new type of relationship, mm-hmm. because there's something that led to the cheating behavior in the first place,
yeah.
as to why that usually happens. So, again, you have to reestablish trust, and it takes a long time to build, and you have to ask really strong investigative questions, not questions about details of the cheating. You know, don't do that. That's going to create triggers and trauma and everything like that. So, but investigative questions, because you need to understand why it happened, what led to it, how did you guys get to this place? Things like, mm-hmm. things of that nature. So
it's great to talk about it though. Let's see. Myth number four: gender differences cause divorce. What do we need to know about that?
Yeah, you know, it was a really popular book that came out back in the day. You know, I believe it was about John Gray. Like, you know, women are from, so was it men are from Mars, women are from Venus, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the theory behind this is that men are typically task oriented. We like to do things, you know, and that women, you know, tend to be more emotional. You know, they need a lot more affirmation and, you know. However, what you find in the research is that women can be just as task-oriented as men, and men literally say a very the number of emotional words per minute that men say during their dialogue is very slight. And so women say about 9 emotional words per minute. Men say 8. So what we're saying is that men are very emotional, highly emotional, just like women. Now, what we're socialized into, the emotions we're able to express is another thing. You know, it's easier to express anger and aggression versus sadness or feeling weak or feeling vulnerable. However, men say a similar number of emotional words per minute. And so gender differences do not cause divorce. Just because one person is a man and one person is a woman, or let's say they're in a homosexual relationship, those are not the things that cause divorce. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to clarify that. That is a myth.
Yeah. So what are the emotional words? Like, give me an example of some emotional words.
So, let's say if I'm talking to my friend and I get excited about something, I'm going to use some words where I may get excited. I may, you know, talk about the game. I'm going to use words that have emotional meaning behind them. Again, we just say the similar number. We're just counting the number of emotional words per minute. So it could be, oh, man, that was so exciting, so on and so forth. Again, that's an emotional word. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. I'm angry. I'm frustrated. I'm tired. Again, these are just words that have feeling. They're, you know, just feeling words, really. So.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So myth number five is dominance structures cause divorce or separation.
Yeah. So many people think that, you know, it's not good if one person dominates the other. You know, everybody needs to be equal and fair, and you get your say and I get my say and so on and so forth. But the truth of the matter is that dominance structures serve a purpose inside of relationships. And so the most important dimension related to happiness is really the perception of fairness. Okay, so do you perceive things as fair? Is my partner emotionally responsive to me whenever I need something? I like to use an example. I think you've heard me use it before. Like, let's say we go to a restaurant with my wife, and I order the food. You know, I'm dominating this area. I'm going to take charge. I'm taking the lead. I'm taking initiative. Server, could you come over here? Yeah, my wife wants the steak and the potatoes. I don't know why I like to say it like that, like I'm a Texan, but she wants the steak and the potatoes. You know what I mean? Now, if she's okay with me ordering that, then that's not an issue. But if she actually wanted the chicken and the broccoli, we have an issue. Or let's say I'm better with money than she is, or she's better with money than I am. And she likes to, you know, go down and look at all the numbers. I give her that, and, you know, you're better in that area than I am. Or let's say I'm better with playing with my son in a certain area. You know, hey, you know, let me do that, or let me dominate in that area. I say dominate, but let me take charge. Let me take the lead in this area of our relationship. They serve a purpose. So imbalances in power typically deal with a couple's perception of the relationship. Again, do they perceive it as being fair? That's the main thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so yeah, so dominance structures definitely serve a purpose in relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, I have issues with that. I don't like to be dominated. Maybe in one place only. I'll let you guess where that would be. You know, but yeah.
Okay,
I don't want a boss. Mm-hmm. Who wants a boss? Right?
Gotcha. So some people tend to be a little bit more passive. They're not as assertive, and they want someone to literally, you know, take the lead, take charge in some way.
I guess.
You know, other people, you know, if you're highly assertive and you don't like to be dominated, you don't like to be micromanaged, then, you know, you shouldn't be with a guy who tends to micromanage you. That's not going to work well for you at the end of the day. So.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think independence is something I think that we all need, whether we know it or not, to be independent, an independent thinker. And I think it's important for your overall happiness, actually. But okay, so let's move on to myth number 6, inability to change your partner's behavior.
Yeah, so this myth really is that the myth is that dysfunctional relationships occur because of one's inability to change their behavior. And so what the research points out is that dysfunction in relationships may not be due to one's ability to change the behavior as much as are you accepted for who you are. And so because by and large, most people don't change. In fact, you've heard me say this before, that the majority of issues in relationships are perpetual, about 2/3. So Gottman found that there were 69% of issues. So doesn't matter who you're with, you select a certain set of issues to deal with for the long haul. So you better get used to those issues, because when you say I do, these are issues that you're going to be dealing with for the rest of your life if you stay together. And so so it's really, are you accepted for who you are? Because that's more important. Do you feel an authentic connection with your partner? And I really want to emphasize that. So acceptance is key inside of a relationship, because that allows you to be, you know, to be vulnerable, to feel safe, to disclose your thoughts and feelings, to, you know, let that be your friend. And but if there are some behaviors that you definitely need to change, and not that you can't change behaviors, but they need to be something that you want to change. It needs to be something that you willingly take on, because you see that would benefit the relationship in a sense. So
yeah. So you either accept them as they are, or you walk.
Yeah. You need to really accept them. Now, you need to be asking a lot of questions as you go along this process, and trying to evaluate, should you be with this person long term? You know, does this person give my sense of humor? You know, is there ease of interactions? Are they compassionate? Are they giving? How do they treat their friends and family and pets? And, you know, are they contemptuous toward us? There needs to be a lot of questions that you go in and ask. But at the end of the day, the person is who they are, and that makes sense. And so by and large, you're not going to change that person. You know, you think you may, but that's a little bit of hubris on your end. So,
yeah. All good stuff. Yeah. Myth number 7 is poor problem solving and poor conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. So poor problem solving and poor conflict resolution. How is that a myth?
Yes. Yeah. So poor problem solving and inadequate conflict resolution, you tend to think that, okay, this is what's wrong in relationships. And really that hypothesis has formed the cornerstone of most couples' therapies. You know, like if we can just resolve all your issues, then you can go about your go about your way and, you know, down the road merrily and be happy and have healthy, stable relationships. But the thing of the matter is that problem resolution solving problems and conflict resolution is a misguided goal. Because, as I said before, you cannot resolve the majority of your problems. That just won't happen. And again, you're going to have that 2/3 of issues with everybody. So I married Bernadette. She never wants to go to the party. I married Marie. She always wants to go to the party. Mm-hmm. I married Felicia. She goes to the party, but she drinks too much. You're going to have an issue with everybody that you're with. So conflict resolution is a misguided goal. Now, you can resolve about 31% of them. You know, that's compromisable. We can compromise about these certain things. But again, you can't resolve the majority of them, but masterful relationships, we call them masters and disasters, the ones that are masterful learn how to get over perpetual problems really quickly. And they even, like, form a team against the, like, whatever this issue is, we're going to tackle it as a team. And we even have things that we laugh about. It's not as big of a deal when those perpetual issues come up. So,
wow. A lot of heavy stuff here. You know your stuff, too.
Well, I mean, let's say, give me an example. So let's say my mother-in-law causes a lot of issues. I know she's crazy. You know she's crazy as my spouse. And so we say, you know what? We need to come together because we know that, you know, my mother can be really intrusive and we need to, you know, we need to protect, you know, certain things in our relationship, not disclose anything. But we come together as a team because mom's not going anywhere. That's a perpetual issue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, again, we need to, So, again, one of those things we have to bond together as a couple against whatever that outside force is, what we call we-ness, us against the world. So
we-ness, I like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so myth number eight is mind reading creates dysfunction within relationships.
Yeah, so, you know, my wife did this to me the other day. You know, I said something and she had a negative slant on it. She was like, you did this because you wanted this. And I was like, whoa, that was not my intent at all. Because usually in relationships, you know, we like to assume what the other person's thinking. Or we attribute certain qualities, we attribute certain thoughts to our partner. Now, here's the thing. There's nothing wrong with mind reading. However, it needs to have a positive slant to it, a positive affect, whenever you're trying to probe feelings for your partner. Because when there's a negative affect associated with it, that's going to lead to defensiveness. So, you know, case in point, I said something to my wife. She showed me, like, she's writing a book right now. She said, hey, look at this feedback that I got from this person who was doing some editing. And I said, oh, let me look at this, so on and so forth. She's like, I feel like it being intrusive. You're going too far. I didn't ask you to go into all these different programs on my phone. I'm like, well, hold up. I was just being curious. I was trying to be helpful. However, she looked at me like, you know what? You're being intrusive. And this stems back to some other times when I have been intrusive. So, again, there's layers there. But that was a triggering point for her, and she had a negative view of what she thought I was doing or the reason why I thought I was doing it. But it wasn't. Once we talked about it, had an argument, clarified a little bit, saying, you know what? That wasn't my intent. I wasn't trying to do that. But, again, she was mind-reading me, but it had a negative aspect to it. But if she would have thought, oh, man, he's really being helpful. He really wants to help me, and this is awesome, man. He's trying to give me all this feedback. Then that would have been a great thing. So nothing's wrong with mind-reading. It just needs to be positive.
Is mind reading and mind mapping, are they the same thing?
They're a little bit different. Well, how would you define mind mapping, Bernadette? I want to try to understand your perspective about mind mapping. So.
I don't know anything about it other than I've heard the phrase before, and I've heard it before, and I just wondered if mind mapping and mind reading are the same thing.
Yeah, so mind mapping is a little bit different. So mind reading is where you assume what the other person is thinking. And so whenever we're talking about mind mapping, it's really where you diagram for certain things and meanings and tasks and words and concepts, what they represent and how they're fixated inside of your mind. So it's a little bit different because you kind of, you know, use a visual representation to show, like, the hierarchical relationships and how things are connected. And so, but mind reading is simply you're assuming what the other person's thinking. So,
I just got a cue. I need to go to break. We're having so much fun talking. I'm not really paying attention to the clock. That's not a good thing. Okay, so we got to go to break. We'll be right back. More coming up with Von Eaglin. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Want to advertise on One Life Radio? Send us an email, info@oneliferadio.com.
We have an exciting announcement to make. Jared Ramirez, our on-air microbiome expert and his team at Enviromedica, took home the 2021 Nexty Award for Best New Product Supporting a Healthy Microbiome. The Nexty Awards recognize the most progressive, innovative, inspiring, and trustworthy products in the natural products industry. We've always known about their TerraFlora Deep Immune Symbiotic. It provides broad-spectrum gut health support while strengthening the body's adaptive response to immune challenges. It is a completely elevated gut immune system support product, a perfect welcome addition to your supplement routine. Visit Enviromedica.com to learn more and order your TerraFlora Deep Immune Symbiotic. Congratulations, Enviromedica.
Contagiously positive, One Life Radio is back.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior in the Mix and Vaughn Eaglin. We are broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. If you're just now joining us, Vaughn Eaglin is a licensed professional counselor, supervisor, and works with two group practices in the Dallas area. He is a certified couple relationship trainer and sees a wide range of clients addressing men's issues, anger management, abuse, and addiction, just to name a few. He is also a doctoral candidate at the University of North Texas in the Counseling and Higher Education Department. His PhD research focuses on couple relationships dialogue. You can find him at VonTalksTherapy.com. That's VonTalksTherapy.com or on Instagram at VonTalks. We're talking about John Gottman's myths and truths about dysfunctional relationships. We are on myth number 9, a lack of meta communication is the reason for dysfunctional relationship. I'm not even sure I know what meta communication is, Vaughn. What does that mean?
Yeah, meta communication is communicating about communicating. That's really kind of what it boils down to.
Okay. It's
like, so if you say metacognition, so metacognition is thinking about what you're thinking about. Like, where did I get this thought? How did it come from? Where did it come from? Should I keep it? Is it true? Is it right? And, you know, is it distorted in some way? You know, meta emotions, a lot of times when I focus in on this with couples, is your feelings about feelings. Because people feel differently about certain feelings, or they're taught to respond to certain feelings differently. One person responds to anger with, you know, an outburst and punching holes in the wall. I may go stuff my anger. You know what I mean? So meta communication, though, is communicating about communicating. And here's the thing I need you to know, that meta communicative statements is dependent on the affect in which you deliver them. So basically what I'm saying is how you say something is more important than what you say, you know, because really, you know, verbal communication is only about 7% of language. You know, how you say something matters much more than what you say. For instance, I could say, Bernadette, I love you. I mean, you're the love of my life. Or I could say it with a little smugness. You know, I get, yeah, I love you. Okay, you're the love of my life. Yeah, okay. You know, again, very different affect that communicates something totally different. So how you say something is much more important than what you say. And some people try to, you know, hold people to the letter of the law, what they say. But you know how they say, you know, the spirit of something, or like the, you know, again, how you say it, again, this matters a lot more than what you say. And that's pretty much what that boils out to.
Huh. Interesting. I'm thinking of some funny stuff. So you want to say, hi, chubby.
So, you know, you know how people say, you know, you can just put a smiley face on the end of any text message, and it's like, kind of like, oh, wow, that baby is so, just so ugly. Smiley face, or, oh, they just, well, no, that's not a smiley face. Anyway, but yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Junior, you have any funny stories you want to share about that? Anything coming to your mind?
Give me a second. Let me try to think. I don't know. Nothing's coming to the top of my head.
We'll come back around. We'll grab you on the next round. All right. Myth number 10, partners need to be complementary of one another. For instance, a domineering partner must find a submissive partner to be happy. Myth number 10.
So the hypothesis is that you got to complement each other. You know, let's say I'm a go-getter or I'm an extrovert. I need to be with someone who's an introvert. And so, but the thing about it is that is not the case. You can have two people extroverted or two people who are really assertive and dominant or type A personalities or whatever you want to call them. That you don't have to complement each other in order to have a successful relationship. And there's a lot of research about there, decades reviews of, you know, like, hey, you know what? Just because people have very similar characteristics, they can still have a very successful relationship. In fact, some of those same characteristics may be some of the things that attract them to their partner because they are like-minded in many ways. Okay. And so you don't have to complement each other in order to have a successful relationship. So that is a myth, you know. So.
Well, and if you do, it should be genuine. And then what if you, you know, if you're like, you know, accustomed to doing that and then, you know, and then you don't do it for a while. I mean, I just think it could be very damaging unless it's genuine.
Yeah. So I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you.
Yeah. Okay. So myth number 11, unresolved issues from one's family of origin cause dysfunction with relationships.
Yeah, so this is very common. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, childhood wounds and how things, you know, from your family of origin can really affect you. And this kind of goes into the next myth, which is called projective identification, which is like, you know, based on my childhood, I project, you know, my caregivers onto my partner. And that's going to lead to more conflict. So your family of origin issues or projecting issues from your childhood is not the biggest issue within relationships. It is really about how that relationship handles it within the relationship, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to get resolved. You can't go back and change your childhood, you know, but the success of the relationship is going to depend on how you guys manage those issues, because they're not going to evaporate on their own. And with the next one about projective identification and projecting this past conflict and childhood wound, really relationships deal more with respect. They deal more with affection, autonomy. Mm-hmm. You talked about independence. I like to use the term, you know, interdependence, where we are independent, but we also depend on each other at the same time.
You're breaking up a little bit, so I apologize if I talked over you. Can you hear me?
No. Yeah. I got you. So,
for a minute. Someone did. You know what? I guess we'll go to, we've got one more break, so we might as well go to it. We're going to go to break, everyone. We'll be right back and pick up the feed with Von Eaglin. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Want to advertise on One Life Radio? Send us an email, info@oneliferadio.com.
Do we really know who Anthony Fauci is? The founder of Children's Health Defense, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., takes a deep dive into Fauci's 50-year reign as America's public health czar in his new book, The Real Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and the Global War on Democracy and Public Health. Fauci's actions are propelling America towards a grim future, and our health freedom is in jeopardy. Get to know The Real Anthony Fauci. Order your copy of The Real Anthony Fauci today on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or wherever fine books are sold.
Celebrating 10 years on the air. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior in the mix, and we are continuing with Von Eaglin talking about John Gottman's myths and truths about dysfunctional relationships. So we're going to switch over to the truths now about truths about dysfunctional relationships. So truth number one, more negativity than positivity. Positivity, that's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, it really, really is, because really a stable couple typically has a ratio of 5-1, meaning that they have 5 positive interactions to every 1 negative interaction. Mm-hmm. And when that ratio falls below 5-1, let's say it's 4-3 or 2-1, usually at least one person says, I'm unhappy. When it's about 1-1 or less, like they have more, at least the same negative as positive interactions, or more negative interactions than positive, typically separation or dissolving the relationship is pretty imminent. Or, you know, if they stay in a relationship, they're going to be really unhappy. But here's the thing about relationships. This does not happen organically. We call it the emotional bank account. You have to be intentional about making positive interactions in your relationship, because, I'll say it a different way, negative interactions are more powerful than positive interactions within your relationship. It takes 5 just to cover up that 1. And you have to be intentional about putting in those, that money in the emotional bank account or having those positive interactions. And by the way, you have different types of stable relationships. You know, like, you know, you have ones that are really affirming, ones that are a little more. My wife and I would probably be in the second category, a little bit more volatile. You know, we're more likely to cut each other off when we're talking. You know, we love hard, but, you know, we make up hard as well. And then you have ones that are a little bit more confident, avoiding. But all of those show at least 5-1. And then you have unstable relationships. Again, they don't have that ratio. You have ones that are hostile, and then what we call hostile, but they're detached. You know, that's the kid that grows up and says, oh, mom and dad never fought. I don't know why they got divorced. You know, so.
Yeah.
So you need that 5-1 ratio. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I remember somebody telling me this. If you blow too many holes in the fence, that next thing you know, there's no fence, right?
Really good analogy, right?
Yeah, it is a good analogy. Think about it. I mean, because all that negativity, you're blowing holes in the fence, and they're hard to repair. Yeah. Hard to repair.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, truth number two is escalation of negative effect and the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse. What in the earth is that?
So this is what happens in relationships when people start arguing, pretty much. So I can talk a lot. We could use the whole show just to talk about these 4 horsemen. But the first one is criticism. When you criticize your partner, that's going to put them on the defensive. And then once you criticize your partner, and there's a difference between criticism and complaint. Nothing's wrong with a complaint. But when they feel criticized, you're probably going to judge them in some way. You know, you're like, you're always, you never, why are you so? You're the kind of person who, that kind of stuff. And then your partner gets defensive, which is the second of the 4 horsemen, and where they probably going to make excuses or hit you with a cross complaint. So a cross complaint is where they meet your complaint with a complaint of their own. Hey, why didn't you do the dishes? Well, you didn't do the bathroom. And let's get into the fact that you didn't take the trash out. You didn't do this, so on and so forth. So you get defensive. The antidote to defensiveness is simply taking responsibility. The third of the horsemen is contempt, and that's the best predictor of separation or divorce. And that's when you see your partner a little bit better than yourself, or you may talk to them, may talk down to them. You may use some name calling, some sarcasm, mocking your partner, correcting their language. Excuse me, it's not tomatoes, it's tomatoes. Can you say that right? Mm-hmm. All of that's contempt. You know, hostile humor is definitely inside of that. So you want to get rid of contempt as quickly as possible. And then stonewalling is really where you try to disconnect from your partner. Now, you think you're being neutral, but typically stonewalling, whenever you try to disconnect, you convey smugness or like mm-hmm. this icy distance. And when you stonewall, your partner's probably going to continue to pursue you because they feel like you're not paying attention to them. So definitely this is what usually happens in relationships. There's a lot of information. You can just Google Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse and Gottman. You can have a lot. There's a lot of information about these because this is relevant in every relationship. So,
mm-hmm. Well, you kind of just covered this, but truth number three is emotional disengagement and withdrawal.
Yes. So there's something called turning force. So each partner tends to make bids for emotional connection. And when those bids are ignored, the result is often an escalation in negative affect. So when someone bids for your emotional connection and you turn away from them, what they're going to do is probably rebid, but eventually they're just going to stop bidding because they're not going to get their needs met. Mm-hmm. Case in point, let's say I have a couple that comes to my office and the husband says, well, you know, I tried to ask my wife to be intimate for 6 months. And after about 8 months, I just stop asking because every time is not a good time and she doesn't want to. You know, it's probably indicative of some other things going on in their relationship, but he just stopped bidding because it's like, I'm not going to get my needs met. Why keep trying to get my hopes up and then feeling down and dejected and rejected and like, no, I don't want to do that anymore. So so it's really, really important that people turn towards their partner when they are bidding for emotional connection. Statistically, couples that stay together have about an 80% turn towards rate. And the ones that divorce after 6 years have about about 33% turning towards, right? So you, if you're not turning towards your partner, you're not recognizing and then meeting their bids for emotional connection, it's probably going to lead to dissolving the relationship.
Okay, so yeah. Truth number four is failure of repair attempts.
Yeah, so all couples are going to have disagreements, fights, you know, moments of miscommunication and hurt feelings. But the dysfunctional relationships are the ones that do not follow up in trying to repair the rift. So it's really, really important that whenever you're at odds with each other, that you try to repair it and hopefully as quickly as possible so you don't continue to, you know, go off into the woods, whatever, you know, so to speak. However, you have to learn how to repair things really, really quickly. And those successful relationships do that by and large a lot better than the ones that are unsuccessful.
Mm-hmm. And truth number five is negative sentiment override.
Yeah, so this is probably one that needs to be talked about for a long period of time. But really, you know, I talked about that mind reading earlier, that whenever you attribute negative qualities to your partner, what will happen is that if you have negative sentiment override, then you color all of y'all's interactions as negative. Because whenever you're looking for negativity in your partner, you're always going to find it. And then when they do something negative, you say, aha, there you go. You're doing it again. I knew it. Because your partner's no longer your teammate. They're like your adversary. You got to protect yourself from them, you know. Mm-hmm. So when someone gets to this point, that means that your relationship is on some, you know, especially when it's consistent, that means you're on some, you know, very, you know, you're not very solid. You know, you're on some, I guess, rocky ground in the relationship.
Yeah, it's understandable. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm looking at the clock. I think we have time for one more, maybe. Maintaining vigilance. No, we don't. There's the music.
Okay. one last thing. Guys, definitely try to accept influence. When your wife or your partner expresses a complaint, try to respond to it, because if you respond to it with belligerence, contempt, or defensiveness, that's going to lead to probably the dissolution of the relationship. So, because men, by and large, how you respond to the complaint of your partner is highly predictive of the success of the relationship. So if you want more information, hit me up. Go to VonTalksTherapy.com, or if you want to participate in my study, you can do that at VonTalksTherapy as well.
Yeah, sounds great. Love having you on the show always. Von Eaglin, everyone. I encourage you to go to his website and participate in the study. I'm sure it will be fun and productive. All right, we got to wrap it up, everyone. Thank you for listening. Remember, you get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Get out there today and make the most of it.